I asked her whether she still felt lonely. Referring to the last few years of her life on Earth, she said simply, "The people you are with on Earth are not always the people you want to be with over here." 105 Her neighbor had told my brothers and I that my mother's husband had totally controlled her life and would not allow any of her friends to see her. The neighbor, being an old woman, did not know how to contact us to let us know what went on. She told us that my mother never received the help she needed. The few times she went round to see my mother, her husband yelled at her and sent her away. He was extremely jealous and underscore possessive and guarded her until she was totally isolated. It was too late when my brother intervened and she died a few weeks later from a stroke. My mother told me that everything we experience makes some sense and that we should not feel bad about it. We talked a little more until I felt reassured. This is how she really was, despite the hardship of her life. Suddenly I became aware of my own physical discomfort as of sitting in meditation. After correcting my position, I entering the same state again, but my mother had gone. I did not manage to enter the heavenly realm where my mother seemed to lead her new life. Instead, I walked through a town, deep in thought, wondering how I could meet her again. Perhaps I could connect with my father, whom I had loved and who had died when I was 9 years old as well. In the corner of my eye I saw a man following me. Then he came dancing alongside me, trying to get my attention. "It is imperative that you listen to me," he said. "This is extremely important." He told me that he knew how to prevent catching AIDS. "I do too," I said impatiently, wishing to return to thoughts of my mother and father. "You just encourage people to use condoms." "No, no," he insisted. "We have found how to cure it and avoid the spread of AIDS. You need to listen to me and carry the information across." He then proceeded to spread out the whole bulk of information right in front of me as we walked along. Before long he had engulfed me in a giant thought form. Everything seemed to make sense, but it was all just too much for me to take in. Unfortunately, I told him, "I am the wrong person to pass this message on." I told him that he should make an effort to locate a more, it would be an uplifting thought to imagine that all people who condemned themselves so foolishly to the lower dimension would one day rise phoenix-like into a happier existence. "We can take comfort in the fact that this indeed will be so, no matter how long it takes. I have learned that the semicolon whole genesis of this universe is programmed to evolve consciousness I through many dimensions. It is reassuring to find that no matter how monstrous our crimes, how deep our delusions and ignorance, we are only an atom away from the universal truth that there is real of only one source for all life." Describing the lower dimensions where people suffer is as impossible as describing the nature of grief. Simply, it is different for every person. There are as many hells within this hell, as there are people. Even an earthquake is experienced differently by every victim. Nevertheless, hells are brought about by states of mind. It's a matter of corresponding energies. It's as simple as that. Scientific or medically inclined messenger, who was able to make more sense of all this. He explained to me his difficulty that most people just thought of it as a dream and discarded it as such when they woke up, and that it was relatively rare to bump into somebody who was so fully conscious and aware. I apologized to him again and told him there was no way I could put everything he was showing me into a sensical format, let alone find any professional who would take me seriously. He nodded dejectedly. I felt very sorry indeed, albeit with a sense of relief that I did not have to carry the burden. But the regret was certainly strong. On reflection, I felt I may have been too eager to dissociate myself from the knowledge, and I wondered whether with a bit more patience and focus I would have been able to bring some of this vital information across, and what it would have felt like. Next headline, the Earth-like dimensions. More knowledge seems to be filtering through from the first and second dimensions. These also appear to be the most populated dimensions simply because they are the ones which match Earth's vibrational frequency closest. A few people spend what amounts to a lifetime here, patiently awaiting the death of those left behind, while others begin to realize very soon the limitation of this plane and become restless and seek advancement. There are plenty of helpers from higher dimensions ready to assist. Others simply sail through this region without touching the ground, following the natural attraction of their more purified makeup to a higher dimension. It is comparatively rare that many people, when venturing out of their bodies, experience the higher realms, because their physical consciousness draws them naturally to the environment that resembles our planet. Most of my experiences have taken place here as well, and I am pretty certain that most communication from deceased relatives via mediums are sent from here. We hear very few descriptions of these mind-boggling higher planes transmitted to clairvoyants, simply because people on the lower level are still very much attached to the life they have left behind, their family's welfare, etc. The next dimension is no more than a counterpart of Earth, a carbon copy of the place we have come to love and cherish, although there are some important differences. The thoughts of people living on Earth are still very much in evidence. It is not unusual to find derelict buildings or even building sites. It is by no means the bright, symmetrical, clean and summery realm often referred to as the summer land in occult literature. The atmosphere varies from region to region, just like on Earth, and it is easy to understand why it is such a hard task to convince people that they are dead. The changes dawn upon them only very gradually, often they are accepted as a matter of course. The fact that they appear younger, and other changes in the laws of nature, are often accepted in the same spirit in which one would accept relocation to another country on Earth. Life and death is experienced in the same state of mind as life on Earth was. A number of people I met were astonished when I presented them with the fact that they were living in the land of the dead, which made me consider the possibility that at least some of them may have regarded their past Earth life as a kind of dream. Some most certainly hadn't cottoned on to the fact that they had died, and they found very few clues of change. I noticed their tendency to try to explain inconsistencies away as rational expectations, sometimes in the most irrational ways. It often takes the appearance of a deceased relative to convince them of their new condition. Unfortunately, there are also occasions where you will find a toast soul. A person who realizes that their situation has changed but just cannot find their bearings. Like most out-of-body travelers, the majority of my OW experiences have taken place in this region. I have got to know the region very well, to the point that I recognize certain landmarks and places. I have been attracted irresistibly to the same place on more than one occasion, without ever finding out why. I have even bumped into people who I have recognized as friends or companions on the other side. But the novelty of finding myself here on these lower vistas when out of body has long worn off, and generally I tried to get out via the quickest route. At first, to the newcomer little realizing the potential of the new opportunities this dimension has to offer, the pleasures to be pursued here are very Earth-like. It is pleasant enough for those of us who are content in keeping on doing what we've been used to. Especially with the added bonus of not having to work for a living, suffering illness or the frailties of old age. Gradually, though, bit by bit, our creative potential stirs, at first simply because we do not have to work in order to exist and so have time on our hands. We make new friends, discover new opportunities, and gradually the atmosphere around us begins to lighten. The moment we begin to feel dissatisfied with our way of life and open ourselves to new influences, we embark, unstoppably, on a new and grand adventure. The following is a typical example. Next headline, What is Real? 23rd of March 2002. I got up at 5 a.m. having spent an hour focusing mainly on my breathing, starting with deep breathing and easing gradually into natural breath. At the same time I focused on my presence, imagining myself to be hovering just over the top of my head. I felt a light pressure which was associated to a gentle luminous glow. Gradually I sank into a deep inner silence. There were thoughts, but they appeared to be drifting past at a great distance and kept at bay, by an authoritative feeling of being and presence which was detached from my social and biological self. The image of a pyramid came and went. The thought occurred to me that I should take the cue and enter the pyramid in order to conduct my meditation in there, but I dismissed the idea as a distraction and allowed the being presence to fill my awareness. I kept my awareness focused on being and observed myself drifting deeper and deeper into a trance-like state. Dream fragments still floated past and it would have been easy to hitch a lift and be carried away, but I resisted. However, the image of riding on a train was irresistibly strong and real. I realized that by simply taking a greater interest in the train I could have transported myself to it. But again I saw this as a distraction and refocused on pure awareness. Yet somehow the train would not leave my field of awareness and again I was tempted to investigate. It was a strange mixture of dream and awareness. Suddenly I was traveling on it looking at the chipped paintwork of the carriage 6 inches away from my face. The reality of studying the minute scratches of the exposed metal under the flaky paintwork catapulted me into super awareness. In physical life I wear glasses, but here I was intrigued by the astonishing sharpness and clarity of my vision. I took an extreme delight in enjoying such a novel visual experience. I remembered that during the days on Earth I had often pondered the nature of reality, matter and imagination in the next dimension. I wondered where the mind assembled the astonishing amount of data required to create a detailed image, or whether perception was a conglomeration of objective matter and data contributed by the mind itself. Now I had a chance to investigate objective matter in another dimension. I could tell underscore that train was non-physical, by the strange train it traveled through and the slightly unorthodox design of the carriages, and yet their physicalness was overpowering. I concluded that the complexity of the material before my eyes was far too random and complex to be imagined. Yet there was nothing about it that was less real than physical reality. I wondered how the chipped paintwork had come about in a universe where the aging process did not apply. Had I imagined or expected it, and had the matter of this dimension complied with my expectation to assemble instantaneously the effect of decay right in front of my eyes? Or was I on another physical dimension which definitely wasn't Earth? I noticed to my alarm that there were other typical signs of dream content, like stuff incoming through the metal skin of the carriage. Then, with a powerful realization, I knew that it was not a dream, but that I was more awake than I could possibly be in physical waking life. My analytical mind was pin-sharp, and my powers of observation far more acute than my physical self possessed. At the same time I was curiously aware that I was still sitting in my chair in deep meditation and I reminded myself to favor a being state and not be distracted by external detail however novel. I had no problem carrying my detached being awareness around with me, despite that I was traveling on a train in a different dimension. My mind was crisp and clear. I could have stepped easily from one dimension into the next in the way that I would step from one room into another. I decided to stay and focused on the paintwork in front of my eyes to establish a strong foothold in this new territory. I also looked at my hands, to make sure and I was astounded by the detail of my skin. I decided to leave the train, which was perched on a steep raised bank, and I trotted light-footed to the bottom of the track. When I looked around I saw signs of human dwelling. I decided to float. Over the years I had discovered that the most pleasurable way of transport is use it, by allowing yourself to be carried along in an almost childlike form of surrender. This had the effect of eliminating any discomfort or fear of a sudden fall. Eventually, I arrived at a busy square with people milling about, quite oblivious to my presence. I seemed to be blending in despite floating about, but on the other hand I might simply have been invisible to them. Curiously, I sensed that while some of the people were real, others appeared to be more like phantoms, looking real, but changing their size and appearance, turning from female into male and vice versa. I had no idea what to make of this, and if anything I felt that this was a distraction. I pondered whether I would be better off devoting my attention to my meditation. In order to do so, I shifted my attention back to my chair in my studio on which I sat meditating. I opened my eyes and saw Julius standing next to me asking me whether I wanted tea. I noticed that she was wearing an unusual dress and I was just about to comment on it when I realized that I was not in the physical reality at all. Without waking up properly, I pondered whether or not to return to the town with a clear task sheet to investigate. The decision was taken away from me when I opened my eyes involuntarily and saw myself in an upright meditation position in my chair. When I looked at my watch, 2 hours had passed. I felt an incredible peace and to deepen my meditation to enjoy samadhi. The vexing question of the composition of matter in the next dimension did not go away. I had studied what was obviously man-made snow in the next dimension, conjured up solely for the purpose of spectacular entertainment. I was intrigued to find that when I focused my attention down to the crystalline molecular structure of the snow, just as on the physical level, each snowflake was constructed individually with their own unique design, just as on Earth. Yet it was obvious that this snow had not come about as a result of some wintry weather, but was clearly the result of human thought, as weather is a physical dimension phenomena. I came to the conclusion that, next headline, interview with a dead print worker. 6th of August 2006. I got up at 5 a.m. After meditating on the heart chakra and the third eye for 1 hour, I decided to go back to sleep. In my dream, I wandered through the building where I used to work. I became aware of a young man in his late 20s walking towards me. He was very tall, at least 7 feet, which struck me as odd, and I became aware that I was dreaming, and I burst into instant wakefulness. I decided to start a conversation with the man, who was very open and friendly. I asked him what he was doing, and he told me that he was working in the printing department. I found this very curious and asked him whether he would mind showing me, as I was interested in the trade because of my profession as an artist. He led me to a spacious printing room with large litho presses. He told me that he was working at the proofing stage and he showed me some very high quality proofs of intricate illustration work. I marveled at the superb quality and tried to identify what it was that I was looking at, but then I became distracted by the fact that the room contained huge cumbersome machines. The fact that we were in the fifth dimension made me wonder what these machines could possibly nature on the next dimension. Responds to human intent and uses its own structure to comply and allow itself to be shaped into anything intention directs it to, by calling upon an already established matrix 13. This explains that the things we create on the next dimension by the power of imagination are so incredibly real in every detail and not just a facade like on a film set. Man, being an intimate and integral part of this being state, is not separate at all, but the individual's will on each dimension is united intimately and interacts with its higher aspects over the divide. This is underlined by the fact that on the higher dimension there is a pervading feeling of being at home. I found that often, and particularly when entering higher dimensions, there was an incredible feeling of intimacy, of having been reunited with the truest feeling of home. A whole fifth dimensional print and media infrastructure was in front of me, and it didn't make any sense at all. I contemplated the possibility that the whole environment existed only as a result of the expectation and intent of this man, that he had loved his job as a printer and as a result had created this printing heaven. I asked the young man whether he knew that he was dead, and he confirmed the accuracy of my speculation. "I used to work as a printer when I was alive," he said. "I still rather enjoy my work." I looked with astonishment at the vast layout. For some reason, the physicality of the environment and the scale of the plant struck me as odd, and I began to marvel at the power of his fantasy. Fascinated, I expected the whole scene to be just an elaborate Hollywood stage set and asked his permission to open one of the covers of the giant machines to discover what was inside. To my astonishment, I saw the engine working away inside 14. It had all the mechanical detail as if it had existed on physical Earth. It struck me that on this dimension, rather than things being less mechanical and depending more on thought for existence, objects appeared to be even more developed than on the physical dimension. As I chatted to the young man, I noticed that his 7-foot height shrank to a more normal size. During our conversation, he drew attention to the fact that I was still alive on Earth. He wondered whether he could ask me a favor and relate a message to his parents who lived in Leeds or Liverpool, I can't remember which. I suggested I should write it down, so I could bring the detail back to my physical consciousness. I decided to link the address and the name with the house number in one sentence to retain it better. Halfway through the address, the young man changed his mind and thought it might not be a very good idea actually. I agreed that it could lead to all sorts of complications. I then asked him what he enjoyed most about being dead. He said the thing he enjoyed above all was the ability to fly, then he took off and flew through the open loading bay doors. I followed behind. The following experiences led me through three higher levels. I was frustrated by the limitations of the lower level. Although I saw many people from different eras involved in different activities, I found it difficult to relate. The most prominent scenes were of people indulging in various kinds of amusement, like the staging of life history events and nostalgic fairs going back several centuries. I saw people in period costumes as well as visitors in contemporary clothing. The whole area was like a large amusement park and very busy, which after a while I found rather tiresome and pedestrian. As I walked towards some houses and entered narrow streets, I was attracted to a bigger building, which I entered. Standing in the porch, I saw a young woman looking downcast. I asked her if I could help her in some way. She told me she was very bored and unhappy with the scenery and wished she could be somewhere else. I suggested to her that there were higher levels we could visit, which offered more creative power and freedom and were less restrictive. She told me she didn't know how to leave this place, because she didn't know where to go. I remembered from previous experiences that there was a psychological barrier, which prevented you entering the higher planes, before you overcame it. This was often represented by a physical barrier like a ceiling. I suggested that she followed me so that we could find a way out of this plane. We walked up the stairs until we reached the attic. I started removing the plaster of the ceiling and pushed the joists away with my bare hands until I had created a hole in the ceiling. I helped the girl climb low the hole into the open, and then followed after her. To our surprise, we found ourselves in an open field. And the first thing I recognized was that the atmosphere was much more pleasant and the light much brighter. The girl cheered up immediately and skipped through the field. I thought it was time to investigate my new, and we both indulged in some terrific aerobatics. At one stage, I suggested we pretend to sit on an invisible armchair with our feet up, holding a drink in the right hand and gliding through the air, which he found very amusing. At this stage, I decided to investigate my novel trip into this new dimension a bit further and bade farewell to the printer. Next headline: Contacting the Dead, 5th of January 2003. I started meditation at 5:30 a.m. After a couple of hours, I shifted my attention to the hypothalamus, in the center of my brain. Almost instantly, I became aware of a strong energy stream, and within our moments I had dual awareness, with part of me aware of sitting in our meditation, and the other part becoming detached. I shifted instinctively towards my detached self and allowed myself to float up greater than and out of my body until I reached the ceiling. Then I descended gently apostrophe back into my body. Keeping my awareness focused firmly on my other self, I left my body again and looked out of the window. It was a beautiful frosty morning with the sun just about to creep over the horizon. The colors were much more luxurious and heavenly than one would expect to see with normal physical sight at this time of day. I was tempted to venture outside and wondered what it would be like to go through the wall. Although I felt no resistance, I was uncomfortable with the darkness environment, but I was labored in flight. I then remembered the technique suggested by William Bulman 15, simply, to command yourself. I said fly, and soared immediately high into the sky. I soon lost sight of the girl. When I looked down, I became aware that the environment had an element of artificiality about it, like the computer-generated images I created in physical working life. I realized then that I was drifting through a void which contained only the 6 subconscious projections of my mind. The world I was flying through was created literally on the hoof, or on the wing, as it were. As I got closer to the ground, I noticed how flimsy it appeared, all thin veils dash very insubstantial. With curiosity, I pondered how my experience of working life had started to tinge the environment of this dimension, which assumed more and more of what I expected to see, namely a computer-generated artificial world. With a feeling of disappointment, I woke up and pondered the nature of reality. I floated gently down onto the patio at the back of our house and enjoyed the beautiful glint of the frosty ground and the white needles of grass, which were invigorated by dancing particles of light that had been bounced into action by the rising sun. It was a breathtaking HD display of energy, enhanced further by the fact I was super awake, in a REM state of consciousness so lucid, crisp and aware that it made my normal life appear like a dream. Exuberantly, I floated towards roof level and, overcome by curiosity, decided to go back into my studio to take a look at my body sitting in the chair meditating. This was a strange experience. Instead of finding my body dot upright in meditation, I saw that it was slumped forward as if I had dozed off. It struck me as a pitiful sight. As I got closer, I was amused to see how rough I looked. I'd gone straight from bed to my meditation chair, and I was sitting there untidily in my dressing gown without a flicker of dignity. I got within 6 inches of my face, wondering if I could improve my appearance, perhaps by trimming my beard or shaving it off altogether. Then I decided to slip back into my body, to see again what it was like from the other side. I accomplished this without the slightest discomfort. Having body awareness again, I decided not to return to meditation, but instead to indulge a little more in my bodiless state. Focusing on my hypothalamus, I re-established dual awareness quickly, then, shifting my focus into my subtle self, I became aware of a strong energy current. I decided to allow myself to be carried out and away from my body until I hovered about 200 feet above a small, but unfamiliar town. As I landed in the street, I noticed a number of people going about their business without paying any attention to me. I took a few elegant floating steps, touching down with one foot, pushing myself off the ground, floating about 15 feet up into the air and landing on the other foot like a ballet dancer in low gravity. I delighted in the childish pleasure, and thought with great amusement what other people would think of this old fool. But nobody else even saw me. I was invisible to all people around me, and there were quite a few of them. I considered the fact that this was not the physical dimension at all, but a counterpart close to the physical, a place where the newly dead lived, as well as those still attached to more earthly concerns and I where dreamers would stray into. I could feel that I was on a slightly higher vibratory rate, which rendered me invisible to the inhabitants. To test my theory, I approached a young lady in a blue floral dress and asked, "Can you see me?" She looked startled in my direction, but seemed to be looking straight through me. Obviously, she was aware of my presence and may have heard me. There was a touch of anxiety in her reply, "Who are you?" I had no idea how to make myself visible to her, so, not wanting to alarm or spook her, I focused all the power of love I could draw upon on her, which brought a reassuring smile to her face. I was aware instantly of the benefit it had on her and how uplifted she felt. Then she called to her friend, "Can you see him?" I appeared to flicker in and out of her vision like some ghostly apparition and had a distinct impression of her experience and perception of me as well as of her feelings towards me. It was only then that I noticed her friend, who looked straight at me, but did not appear to see me, although I knew she too was aware of my presence. Being unable to figure out how to make myself visible, I thought it would be best to move on. I decided to kiss the lady in the blue dress on her forehead by pouring the love and affection into her. She smiled, replied with a thrilling affection, and I departed. I was stunned by the power of the feelings I could generate,